Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology with its sleek mid-cut silhouette. It's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome, tennis fans, to KickServeRadio.com 2024, part of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, featuring International Tennis Hall of Famer, former world number one, Mats Wilander, and Texas Longhorn all-time great, two-time All-American Johnny Levine. Your host of KickServeRadio.com is Andy Zoden. So, take it away, AZ.
And take it away, I will. Welcome, everybody, to KickServeRadio.com. We are part of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. And if my voice seems like it's a little out of sorts, oh, my goodness, I'm just getting back from the desert. What a time out there with you, Mats Wilander. The BNP Paribas Open, followed by the Arizona Tennis Classic. Johnny Levine will be joining us later in the show. Mats, let's start with, I think we have no choice, but earlier in the week, we saw a devastating tragedy in Miami, as the boyfriend and significant other of Aryna Sabalenka, an apparent suicide, and it's just got the tennis world reeling and in shock right now. We have to pay some sort of respect to this situation. Our hearts go out to Sabalenka and her family and all of the people close to that situation.
Yeah, Andy, nice to be with you. I mean, that's just terrible news so far. I guess what we heard is that it's an apparent suicide, that maybe Koltsov was the boyfriend's name, maybe jumped. No foul play suspected, obviously. So I can't even imagine how Sabalenka must be feeling. It's just absolutely terrible. I have heard that she is sort of still thinking about playing. I know she's practiced a couple of times since this happened, but just terrible. And of course, our thoughts go out to anyone that's close to Koltsov, of course, and Aryna Sabalenka specifically.
And we do hope and make mention of the fact that for people who are in a situation that feels desperate and they are dealing with that kind of depression, that you will take it upon yourself to try to find some help, because there are so many people that you may not realize care so much about you and want to see you get through the tough times and get back to a better place. So we hope that people learn some things from this, and that those that are feeling like they're in a tough spot reach out for help before doing something desperate like that. That being said, Mats, as cliche as it sounds, even coming out of my mouth now, life goes on. And we are coming off of the BNP Paribas Open, which was a tremendous tournament. Carlos Alcaraz comes out with the victory. Iga Świątek comes out with a victory. Let's start on the men's side. I will start by saying that in a tournament that Rafael Nadal pulled out of before it even started, and Novak Djokovic was out unceremoniously at the hands of a lucky loser, Luca Nardi from Italy, the tournament still really kind of held its own. And we saw an amazing semifinal with what is now the IT rivalry with Carlos Alcaraz and Jannik Sinner. And I, for one, Mats, was surprised at the result of that match.
Yeah, it was a little bit too. It wasn't as good a match as I think we've seen between the two before. But again, there are signs that Jannik Sinner is one that can overpower Carlos Alcaraz. And Alcaraz, I think this time around, he figured out that I have to play a little more defense. I got to play a little bit higher over the net, and I got to run and use my foot speed rather than his firepower on the forehand and the backhand. So I think it's a great win. Jannik Sinner, I mean, definitely hurt himself when he took one pretty bad fall, it looked like, and he wasn't the same after that. So a good match. This rivalry is going to go on for another 10 years, hopefully. And I think the big debate's going to come up. Who's going to win more? Who's going to be more dominant? Who's going to be at number one for more weeks than the other? Who's going to win more slams between Sinner and Alcaraz? A couple years ago, Alcaraz for sure. Today, I'm not so sure. Sinner is very predictably aggressive. And if Alcaraz can be predictably smart like he was in that match, then I think it's going to be a very close race.
You just took the words right out of my mouth with regard to what I heard. I was in Phoenix at the Arizona Tennis Classic, so I did not get to see that match, which bummed me out. But what I heard was, after one set, Alcaraz realized, I can't slug with this guy, which is pretty amazing to think that Carlos Alcaraz would have to go by way of a plan B. But it sounds to me, Matt, you saw the match I did not like. He really had to kind of rethink and reinvent what he was going to do. Of course, Sinner wins the first set 6-1. What did you see by way of those adjustments?
Well, I mean, he makes adjustments, and a lot of it, I think, are thoughts and advice that comes from Juan Carlos Ferrero. And I think Carlos Alcaraz knows what he needs to do, but it's nice to get somebody from the sideline say that. And so I think on this kind of court, you can't with Jannik Sinner. If you're going to go for big shots and go for winners, he is so good, especially up above his shoulder on both the forehand and the backhand. The forehand, obviously, because he's got pretty extreme Western grip, but on the backhand, because he can jump up 2 or 3 feet in the air and he can actually get power there. And I think that's the big difference between him and Alcaraz. Plus, he serves better than Alcaraz. So I think what became plan B needs, in my eyes, to be plan A. Plan A for him needs to be go out there and play, not defense, but play safe, use your foot speed, play with some height over the net. He's still going to hit enough drop shots and enough winners, but I think consistency is going to be the key for him, because if he does, then there's not many players that will beat him unless they are at the absolute top of the game. And a lot of players, that's not even enough.
Well, I think, Mass, if I read between the lines and listen between the lines, if you will, it sounds to me like we want both. And we want to see Carlos Alcaraz be Carlos Alcaraz, but then we want to see Carlos Alcaraz take a page from that very book written arguably by Novak Djokovic when it comes to, as you have described, at the business end of a set, when he gets into tiebreakers and he tightens things up just a little bit and he's hitting at 90% pace as opposed to 100% pace, because he realizes that he is not going to give you anything for free. And if he plays an airtight tiebreak, or if he plays airtight tennis from 4-all in a set, he's going to win 65, 70% of those sets, which is a lot on this tour in this day and age. But up to 4-all, maybe we see Alcaraz in all of his splendor in a little bit more of a freewheeling mode. And then at 4-all, he takes a deep breath and exhales and goes, time to go Novak now.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a place for what he can do with a tennis ball. It could be up a break in the first set. It could be up 40-15. It could be 40-love, 30-love even, if he's feeling confident. Then he can throw it in. I guess the big question is, can your mind work like that? Or are the drop shots and the wind, are they always going to enter as a thought? And sometimes the arm listens to the thought rather than the decision. And I think that's what's going to be so interesting to see to see where he's going to go with his tennis. But I think this was a really important win. He hasn't won since Wimbledon. Hopefully it gives him a bit of confidence going into Miami. But to me, now that he's won one, more importantly, going into the clay court season.
With regard to Novak Djokovic, Mats, it's one thing to not play your best, lose a few sets in the early part of the Australian Open, and get pretty well handled by Jannik Sinner in the semifinals of a major. It is another thing altogether to play three sets with Alexander Vukic and come out on top, but then in the following round, play a youngster from Italy, Luca Nardi, a lucky loser ranked 123 in the world coming into that match, and lose a third set after winning the second set, seemingly getting back on the rails. And yet, what is to be made of that? I mean, that seems to me a bit of a freakish loss.
Yeah, I think maybe the confidence is a bit dented after the Australian Open, I would think. Not because he lost to Jannik Sinner, but just the way that he played and made a lot of forced errors. He couldn't find a rhythm, didn't really look like he had great feel that day. And obviously he talked about it after, saying it's one of the worst matches that he's ever played as a pro. It's hard to argue with him there, I suppose. On the other hand, in a quality opponent and now a Grand Slam champion, a sinner, maybe that's what he does to you. Be interested to see how the other guys feel when they play Novak after having seen him lose to Sinner in not a great match and also lose now. Do they take confidence out of seeing Novak be human for once?
My suspicion is they smell blood in the water. A guy that should have smelled a little blood in the water, and you would have thought, I mean, if Tommy Paul was going to break through and make a final, and it looked for all the world like he would, I mean, both semifinalists that lost won the first set 6-1 in their respective semi. Obviously, Jannik Sinner against Alcaraz and Tommy Paul against Daniil Medvedev. And I personally was looking forward to a Tommy Paul-Carlos Alcaraz match, because Tommy Paul thinks he can beat Alcaraz because he has. And they've always played unbelievable matches. I mean, the matches that Alcaraz plays against Tommy Paul are almost at the level of the matches against Sinner. But for Paul to let that one get away after winning 6-1 on American soil in front of an American crowd, does that result of getting to that semi help or hurt his confidence at this moment?
Well, I think it helps his confidence because he played great. He played great in the whole tournament. So I think it helps his overall confidence. But at the same time, getting into the court and playing in a big, big match like the semis of Indian Wells is against one of the best players in the world. And you get a good start like that and you can't pull it out. I say when that situation happens, he might be feeling that again. But I do agree. I was kind of hoping to see Tommy Paul and Carlos Alcaraz. It's different than Jannik Sinner and Alcaraz because Tommy Paul doesn't hit the ball as hard. But are they the two fastest players in the world, Tommy Paul and Carlos Alcaraz? They're unbelievable athletes. I think Tommy Paul, he proved something. He can beat the best players in the world. He can even overpower someone like Daniil Medvedev for a short time. And I think that he's taken a step in the right direction.
So as far as nerves go, Mats, when you look back on that tournament, when were you more nervous, stepping out onto the court to play a big match at Indian Wells or stepping onto the stage at the Village Stage at the BNP Paribas Open to play guitar and sing next to REO Speedwagon lead singer and frontman Kevin Cronin, which you did a fabulous job, by the way. So,
well, let's keep in mind that when I played the tournament in Indian Wells, it was first held at the La Quinta.
Okay.
A very small court, maybe a couple of thousand. Then we moved over to the Grand Champions over at the old Hyatt Hotel. And that was big. So the tournament wasn't as big, as meaningful as it is now. No, I've never, ever felt the same before a tennis match ever. And I don't think I ever will that I felt trying to go up there and sing with Mr. Kevin Cronin. So, you know, it's different. And Kevin Cronin was trying to tell me, well, it's just like you and I playing doubles together. I mean, No, it's not. Because if he hits a tennis ball and he screws it up, it's not going to matter for me. But if I come on and play a song with him and my guitar is out of tune or too loud or the chords are not taken properly, then that's what the people hear. And Kevin Cronin is next to me playing guitar and it sounds terrible. So yes, I was unbelievably nervous, excited at the same time. And I think realizing that those are the situations in life where you learn about your real state of mind and you might feel like, oh, I can get up there and I can sing. My audience, Andy, is one normally, and that's me, myself.
In the shower.
Yeah, and well, in the shower, it's hard to play guitar in the shower, but I might as well.
True.
But being tone deaf and playing for only myself, it's hard to know what it's going to sound like. It was so much fun. Kevin Cronin is such a great guy. What a gentleman. Andy, you did a great job, and I think people had a really good time. I did, and I thought it was a very, very enjoyable hour and a half on the Village Stage.
And for those that don't know, Mats and Kevin and I took the stage on Thursday night, which is normally the night the Bryan brothers play. They took Friday night this year. And we went up there and it was kind of a blind shot at the green. We really weren't sure what any of us should expect from one another. We knew Kevin would be great. We weren't worried about, right? And we had some videos and we had some stories and we compared the two careers of you and Kevin. And I think what I was really most impressed by was how well you sounded, Mats, because I've listened to you kind of strum and play and sing a little bit, but you really got up there and you know, when you did you know, Knocking on Heaven's Door. I mean, you know that song and you played it and you sounded great and the crowd really was receptive to you. Now, it doesn't hurt that you're performing in front of a crowd of massive tennis fans. So they're going to give you a little bit more love than maybe they would have if it was just some state fair or something. But you were great. And the blend of the three of us, it was so much fun. And I don't know about you, but when I looked out there and I saw a couple of thousand, 2,500, 3,000 people, and they seemed pretty engaged in the show. And I think we all learned a lot from it. And it was, as you say, it was a really, really special night at the BNP Paribas Open. And thank goodness they gave us that opportunity. And hopefully they don't consider that we botched it.
With Kevin Cronin from REO Speedwagon. It's interesting when I start talking to him how we kind of the height of REO Speedwagon was basically in the 80s. They're still out there. They're still great, of course, which I'm not. That's the biggest difference between musicians and professional athletes. Our dream sort of ends when it comes to competing and being one of the best in the world. But the 80s was a huge decade. Obviously, that was my only decade. But for Kevin Cronin and REO Speedwagon, it was a huge decade. And the interesting part when I talk to him is when you're at the top of your game, you are aware of everything that's going on in the world, everything that's going on with music, any interest you have, because you're like a sponge.
Right.
You're not just devoted to tennis, because to be a great player and to win matches and to win Grand Slam tournaments, you need to be devoted to life in many ways, because everything plays a part. And I think Kevin, we talked about him. He's like, of course I know who you are, Mats. Of course, we used to follow it all the time.
Right.
And it's only because in the 80s, he was, I think he was looking around and, wow, we're doing great. Oh, Mats Wilander on the tennis court is doing great. So I think that's what we have in common, the 80s. The 80s was very special.
So as we go forward now, Mats, and let's circle back. If we're going to go back to guys that are maybe, on the back end of their careers, I mean, we circle back to Djokovic and Nadal. I mean, I guess I have to ask you the question now. Will Novak Djokovic or Rafael Nadal win a major this year?
Well, I definitely think that Novak will pull out Wimbledon or the U.S. Open. Wimbledon,
okay.
I think the main reason there is because he's so great on grass and there are not that many guys that are dangerous for him on a grass court. Not the way that Matteo Berrettini was when he made the finals, or even Nick Kyrgios when he made the finals. They pushed Novak because they play a massive game with massive serves. There are not that many guys that can play like that. So I think Wimbledon is a good chance. French Open depends on the clay court season, and then the US Open again. So I think that when he takes a loss like he did at the Australian Open and another early exit, I think we have to realize, just like when he was prohibited from playing because of the COVID vaccination or the lack of it for Novak, that gave him a month and a half off that year when he didn't go to Australia. And after that, he had a great year. So I think when he's not winning and playing matches, he's getting well-needed rest. At his age, it's still needed. So I think he's going to win one for sure. Rafa Nadal, I just want to see him play one more time at the French Open. I really do. And I think if he goes, we now found out in Indian Wells that he's only really going to go if he feels 100% and he feels like he has a chance to win. So hopefully he can heal up and he'll be a threat, that's for sure, against whoever he plays.
All right. Very good. Mats, we will be in touch. Thank you so much. And I will move on to Alex Gruskin with Cracked Rackets. We're going to talk about some of these younger players on the tour, and this guy has always got that incredibly high energy, youthful exuberance. He is one of the young guys that is up and coming in this industry. We love chatting with him, and we talk to Alex Gruskin from the Cracked Rackets podcast right after this.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back, everybody. KickServeRadio.com, part of Tennis Channel Podcast Network. As promised, Alex Gruskin, who is the star of Cracked Rackets, part of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. So we are Tennis Channel Podcast Network brothers, and it's always great to talk to you, Alex. And we're both coming off of our own version of the Sunshine Double, where we go out to Palm Springs and enjoy the BNP, go out to Arizona, enjoy the ATC, the Arizona Tennis Classic, and neither of those disappointed. That being said, how much do you feel the BNP Paribas Open suffered with the withdrawal of Rafael Nadal before the tournament even started, and then the unceremonious dismissal of Novak Djokovic at the hands of lucky loser Luca Nardi?
It's an excellent question to ask. Let me just follow up quickly. You win the Sunshine Double, they put you in the Tennis Hall of Fame in Newport. You win the, we'll call it the Maricopa Double, when you go from Palm Springs over to Phoenix. Yeah, they put you in like a local Hall of Fame, like a local YMCA. They'll put your poster up as the employee of the month. And so it's great to have
next to a wanted poster, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so it's great to have someone who's in there in the fight with me who understands that journey. And it's an absolute pleasure to be here with you today. I mean, look, Indian Wells, there were certainly some ups and some, you know, some highs and lows. Anytime a storyline such as whatever we're calling it, I think it's a full-on gate, right? It's a B gate, right? It's like, you know, Watergate, B gate. That's where we're going to put it up with the Bees, interrupting that quarter final. Yeah, the swarm. Like that. Whenever that becomes a storyline that transcends a day, I never think that's a good thing for a tournament because it means we're not talking about the tennis that unfolded that day. But truth be told, I don't think the tournament suffered given the absence of Rafa, given the early absence or the early exit of Novak Djokovic, because ultimately, what more can you ask for on the men's side, certainly, than a Sinner versus Alcaraz semifinal and Alcaraz versus Medvedev final? Those are three of your four best players in the world, and you got to see them go head to head on back to back championship weekend days. And then on the women's side, I'm pretty sure the list was 1992 Monica Seles, 1996 Steffi Graf, and 2024 Iga Swiatek. Those are the three players who have lost the fewest amount of games ever in winning the women's singles title. And Iga didn't drop a single set. You look at Iga's win percentage now in her first, I think it was like 30 finals or something. She trails only Navratilova in terms of most titles won in those finals. She now has a higher 1,000 level tournament win percentage than even Serena Williams, and it's the highest of all time. And it's just so very clear who the once in a generation talents are of this next generation. And to see them all play at, you know, near or if not at their best this past weekend, I don't think the tournament suffered. Is that fair?
Well, it's fair. Mats Wilander made a statement in the previous segment that when you have Sinner and Alcaraz in the same tournament, they are likely going to carry the tournament now. You also had Tommy Paul in those semis. You've got a group of young players. We'll go to the Arizona tournament shortly, but a Matteo Berrettini. These are guys that go a little bit beyond what they do with a tennis racket in their hands in terms of really electrifying a tennis crowd. Who are some of the people that maybe we haven't mentioned that might not necessarily come to the front of an old guy like my mind that you can roll right off of your tongue and go, oh, well, you know, Sebi Korda or whoever these guys, Tommy Paul, you know.
I don't understand why Medvedev doesn't put more butts in seats. Like, talk about the most fascinating chess player we have maybe on the board right now, a guy who lets you know exactly what he's feeling out on court, a guy who, whether it's viscerally, whether it's tactically, like, you just get a look into everything Medvedev's thinking throughout the course of the match, the way he pops all, the length, the physicality, the plus one on the serve. He can kind of do all the things you want in modern tennis. He's also this modern 6'6", like, giraffe out there who moves so fluidly. And I just feel like that guy who also can get a little cranky. Like you look at that Holger Rune match when Rune goes right back up the middle at him and Medvedev gives him the thumbs up because he didn't see the apology come immediately after. That's the spice I'm looking for. And so like that's a mainstream guy who I just don't think has the cult following. You're right. Like Andy Roddick would make the women swoon. Andy Roddick would make the frat bros put them in seats as well because he's got the backwards hat and you feel like, did he shotgun a beer before he came out on court? Like some scholars would argue, maybe. And so it's funny that a guy like him never got, I feel like, the cult following someone of his stature typically does. And yet, you know, you go beyond that. I called it the handsome bull. Tommy Paul versus Casper Ruud. That was a quarterfinal. I mean, just like that's two beautiful, beautiful young men.
And that's only because Berrettini wasn't there to be a part of
exactly,
that.
Yeah, exactly, because he was in Phoenix. Right. Exactly. He got invited to the Handsome Bowl.
Right.
He was just preoccupied.
Exactly.
But no, 100%. But like those guys, I think Ben Shelton, like it was brought to my attention that there are people out there who don't like Ben Shelton. And I just don't understand that because Ben is everything to me this sport just needs. Like just pure, youthful, exuberant enthusiasm and an innocence to not know better. And it's just like, that's the sort of personality that gets beaten out of you in our sport if you're through the junior system for 15 years. If you come up the traditional ITF challenger, no college tennis routes. And it's just like, how is he not only just like young, energetic, passionate, he's got the smile, he's a person of color as well, something our sport always can use more of. It's just like, how is that not a future superstar? Like I could watch Ben, who always seems to end up 6-4 in the third some way at late at night anyways. Like he's the name to me where if you're him, like a Jack Draper, an Arthur Fee, like there's just a list of 21 and under guys. Even Sinner's 22, Alcaraz is 20, Yuri Lehechka's 22, and he just made a surprise quarterfinal. There's this group of 22 and under guys who are just super, super talented. And I hope I answered your question. I don't think I really did. But the answer is I could pick any name out of the hat because the game right now feels deep in a way that I don't know if it did even as recently as 5 years ago.
Well, here's what I will say. You describe Ben Shelton very much the way I have always described you, with that youthful, exciting exuberance. So Alex Gruskin is very much the Ben Shelton of tennis commentary and analysis and podcasting.
Except for so much less athletic. I cannot emphasize
You've got a pretty big serve, though, when it comes to start. You just come out firing. Let's move on, Alex, to the Arizona Tennis Classic, because that's where you and I first met and first had the opportunity to work together. And I think we both share a common level of admiration for this cute little challenger that's now a really big time pro tennis tournament. And we're both so proud of Johnny Levine for what he has done. And it doesn't hurt when you have a final this year, which includes the inaugural champion, who happens to be Matteo Berrettini, going up against the defending champion, your boy Nuno Borges. I mean, if there was ever a dream final, that was it.
Yeah, what was so amazing about Phoenix this year, and you mentioned it, Berrettini was the inaugural champion, but he's going to have fans wherever he goes. The fans remembered Nuno. Like, they really enjoyed having him back, and they embraced him in a way that I've seen other challenger champions, particularly challenger champions not from the United States, come back and play these states-based events. And they don't always get that warm of a reception upon their return. And what was so amazing to me is Berrettini is going to put butts in seats, right? So that final was always going to be packed no matter what. But to see it packed in a 50-50 partisan way, like people were willing to get passionate for Berrettini, but then they were also like, wait, this is our Nuno. Like, this is our guy. It feels like he is a product of this Phoenix event and he continues to go out and have success because of it. And to see Phoenix embrace him, to see Phoenix embrace the doubles, it always helps to have Berrettini, of course. But, you know, again, to see people buy into Nuno, to see people buy into other young college guys. Last year it was Kovacevic. This year it was Vukic. You know, again, a couple of Illini guys having success here in Phoenix.
Artur Cazaux, I think,
100%.
Put on a great show. And we
How
hope
about
he's
the Spider-Man?
Well.
The Spider-Man, yeah. Or front half of the week, he had a little cult following going. Zach Svida, the two-time Kalamazoo champion. And just, you know, the best part is you guys, you, Johnny, your college tennis ties as well. Like, there's just an inherent base of people with tennis connections who come to this event and make it that much more fun because they get how it works. But it amazes me. And again, you've seen the two. I think the passion of the Phoenix crowd, the way they're just, again, it's a challenger event, so it is more intimate. I almost enjoy that more than Indian Wells. Now, Palm Springs is going to Palm Springs and have its moments, but there's just something about the way this crowd looked at Nuno and thought, he is one of us, that just, like, you don't get that at a bigger event because it's too mainstreamed.
But the other thing about Nuno, did you actually see the final?
Oh, did I see the final? I had it on repeat.
Did you see then, obviously, Nuno makes one of these Mats Wilander-esque type of moves where at set point,
yes,
and Berrettini hits a first serve that's substantially in, and Nuno misses a return, but the automatic lines person called it out, and so Jimmy Pino has to then call it out, and you don't see Berrettini react and come to the chair, but he did, and ultimately it was decided that the serve was in and replay the point, and Berrettini's like, whoa, wait a minute, he said Nuno, you know, and Nuno said your point. He insisted, and that's set point against Berrettini. And Berrettini has served his way out of a lot of deeper holes than that. And he could have given away that set, given away that match. And the level of sportsmanship that both of those guys showed, I think, lends to your point of that crowd falling in love with that pairing and not necessarily siding with one player or the other.
100%. There's a great story about him. It was shared on one of our Cracked Rackets podcasts, so I can share it here from one of his teammates, where freshman year Nuno, first semester on the job, like very first semester, very first week of fall practice.
This is 8-9 years ago.
This is 8-9. Don't remind me. But it's like 8-9 years ago. 2016. And everyone's looking, you know, again, it's conditioning week. It's fall. Everyone's trying to get in shape. So they did their big day of conditioning, and then they get to the court. And everyone, and you know, again, Nuno's playing this match. He's up practice match. He's up a set and 2-1, and he's bawling his eyes out. And he's been crying for 30 minutes straight.
Wow.
And so finally everyone's like, Nuno, like, what is the deal? Like, what's going on with you right now? And he's like, Coach, I am in so much pain. He's like, my legs, I've never done the fitness that we did yesterday.
Wow.
And now you want me to play tennis, and I can play. Like, I'm not going to quit. But I have to cry. He's like, it hurts so much. And it was like, oh, you really, like, you've never done this athleticism thing before, have you? And he was like, no, I just kind of showed up and played. Like, that was his lifestyle. And so to hear him talk about how that's been his commitment these last 2 years, and to see that, like, manifest itself, where you're like, dude, you're an athlete now. Way to go. Like, you can move a little bit. And so that to me is why he's always had this upside, is because the tennis has never been the problem. It's to see him now have the speed to handle that Matteo Berrettini serve and plus one forehand, and have the skill set and, you know, again, stamina to come back and do it point after point, to be the guy who, despite all the rain and some double headers for some guys, like, he never looked weary at any point of the week. It just speaks to Nuno's development. Like, he has become a hell of a player.
What can we look forward to that you guys have upcoming on your podcast here in the not too distant future?
We've got a lot of broadcasts right now happening at Cracked Rackets, college tennis broadcast for the ACC, SEC, Big 12, and Big 10 every Friday and Sunday. A lot of that content's on ESPN Plus. So you didn't cancel your subscription post Australian Open. You're looking for an excuse to use it. Come check us out. Of course, us like you, Tennis Channel Podcast Network, Mini Break, Great Shot Podcast, Cracked Interviews Podcast. I don't know if listeners can tell after this, but I like talking tennis. That's my thing. So that's what's up at Cracked Rackets. But of course, most importantly, it was great to get to see you and Johnny. I appreciate you guys treating me like family, and it's really a pleasure to be on the show today.
He is one of the up and coming stars in our business, and you are going to continue to hear more and more from Alex Gruskin. Clever, passionate, witty, funny,
handsome.
A good dude, handsome in some people's eyes. Depends. After a week of being around Matteo Berrettini, I'm just, you know, it's hard for me to. He's Alex Gruskin. I'm AZ. Johnny Levine coming up right after this. More of KickServeRadio.com, part of the aforementioned Tennis Channel Podcast Network. Don't go away, everybody.
Hi, guys. Sarah Z here with a Kick Serve Quick Serve with my friend and nutrition guru, Courtney Ward with Body Fuse. Courtney, as we ladies start to get, more advanced or more experienced in our life, our fitness levels take a hit if we're not careful, don't they?
You know, Sarah, they do, unfortunately, and I highly suggest supporting your activities at every stage, pre-workout, intra-workout, and post-workout. So you want to think about a pre-workout. We have a product called Endgame, and that basically will allow you to increase your energy and focus during your workout. And then intra-workout is almost just as critical. So we have branched-chain amino acids called BCAA-311. And that's a perfect product to allow your body to almost refuel while you're working out. It's a super hydrator as well as a muscle recovery while you're working out. And then finally, protein is critical post-workout, and Body Fuse Lean Protein is one of the highest quality proteins on the market. Very, very effective, a slow, long burn, 6 to 8 hours after ingestion and after that workout. So your energy, you're not going to crash, and your energy continues. You're feeding your muscles and you just feel great. So with these three elements, pre, intra, and post-workout, you're really going to support yourself at all stages in any activities, in intense workouts, tennis matches, body strength conditionings, sessions, etc.
Fantastic. And one more time, Body Fuse.
BodyFuseUSA.com.
Well, I'm Sarah Z. She's Courtney with Body Fuse. And now back to more tennis talk with the Kick Serve Radio Boys.
Welcome back, everybody. KickServeRadio.com, Tennis Channel Podcast Network. Big thanks to Alex Gruskin from Cracked Rackets for coming on with us. That guy, Johnny Levine, has got some energy that puts the two of us to shame, that young dude.
Here's Johnny.
Yes, he does. And he is an aspiring guy in this business, and he is making a lot of headway, and he was awesome in Phoenix, and he's got a very promising career in this business.
Speaking of tennis as a business, you're a tournament owner now. You've had this thing going since 2019, and here it is, 2024. You missed a couple of years because of COVID, but you've run this tournament successfully four times. When you look at some of the business principles that have made you successful away from tennis, and then you look at the business side of being a tournament owner, is the business of tennis in a healthy place right now, in your opinion?
Well, that's a tough question, Andy, because every tournament is different. And we can see that the big slams, the four major slams, are at capacity and they do amazing. And the revenues that are generated for those tournaments are increasing every year. And, you know, for instance, the U.S. Open, what they do in revenue supports every single program that they have during the year. So it's an absolute money machine for them. When you get to, you know, like in Indian Wells in Miami, I don't know the model of those tournaments, although you can see that at least in Indian Wells, packed crowds, you know, it seems like that tournament does very well. The issue with some of the tournaments in the U.S. is that, you know, we've lost a lot in the U.S. because they haven't made it. They haven't made financial sense. And I will tell you, it's a thin margin, and it's not easy. These things, to do them right, they take a lot of money to operate. And, you know, the ticket sales, the gates, you know, at the beginning of the week, always struggle, because you don't have, you know, people are waiting for the weekend, the tournament as it progresses. They want to see the bigger and the better matches. So, you know, there's definitely challenges to the model.
But in your case, I was standing there when you gave the check to the Phoenix Children's Hospital for $100,000 or north of $100,000. And the doubles finalists, Rinky Hijikata and Henry Patton's mouths open, like their jaws hit the floor, and their reaction was so like, wow, unbelievable. And you could just tell that those guys were so incredibly heartened to be a part of something that was not just a well-run tournament where they were taken care of as well as they were. And the tennis was so great and the hospitality was so great at the Phoenix Country Club. But then at the end, to stand there and be able to make a donation like that, I think that speaks volumes for the way you have conducted this thing. And I know that being where you are in the calendar has helped because it's during the second week of Indian Wells, but there's a lot more to it than that. And you just went to Orlando. I got to believe you received some pretty positive feedback from the people that you were meeting with over the past couple of days.
Yeah, I was at a conference for the Challenger Tour. Many of the operators were there. Some folks from the USTA were there, and then the ATP staff, and you know, it was kind of a collaboration and a learning experience to, you know, talk to other tour, you know, operators and see how their tournament does and sharing ideas. And, you know, the bottom line is, you know, the big question is obviously the players are paramount because without them, you don't have a game, but then, you know, you don't have a tournament, but then, you know, without the sponsors, you can't support a tournament. You can't pay the players. So, you know, those are the two most important things. You've got the players and you've got the major sponsors that pretty much, you know, fund the majority of these tournaments. Now you do get the public ticket sales, but that's not the major driver.
No,
it's really the sponsors. And we have developed some great relationships with a lot of folks in this town and, you know, through business and what have you. And Phoenix is an entertainment town and it was thriving for tennis. The setting at the Phoenix Country Club, the week in the calendar. We have a lot of things going for us. But I will tell you, Andy, it does all come down to sponsorship sales. And that was the theme at the conference was your sponsors.
I think we'd be remiss, Johnny, to not single out two guys in particular that I think allow you to do what you're good at, which is court these sponsors and make sure that these people, you know, have that really high level experience and then make sure that the tournament runs without any hitches. And that's Weller Evans and Miguel Nieto. And when I watch them operate and I see some of the different things that if I were the tournament director would have me really stressed out, like rain and some of the things that happen in players, you know, withdrawing and injuries and some of the things that can really put a hiccup and you just never see those guys bat an eye. So to have such experienced guys that have been there and done that for so long, I got to believe that that takes an enormous weight off of your shoulders.
Well, absolutely, Andy. I mean, Weller Evans being our tournament director and Miguel Nieto being kind of our business consultant, both combined, you know, probably 80 plus years experience. And they're two of the best in the business, you know, Weller being, having been a ATP tour manager representing players, knows all the workings of behind the scenes, all the things that go into having a smooth operation of the tournament. To be able to lean on Weller and not have to worry about that component and then be able to focus more on, you know, the sponsors has been fantastic for me. You know, Miguel does a lot of the behind the scenes before the tournament, figuring out the hotel and the transportation and lots of little things. And he's really good at that.
And then you bring on, you know, you save money by bringing on sort of non-scholarship walk-on type guys like myself to do what little do I do. Let's get to the tournament, Johnny. And you had a dream final for those that really, you know, it's hard to keep up with both, because you've got the BNP and you got Alcaraz and Sinner playing on the weekend and then Alcaraz and Medvedev playing on Sunday. But you had a dream final. We had a dream final on Sunday with the inaugural champion, I mentioned him already, Matteo Berrettini, and the defending champion, Nuno Borges, who since that win in 2023 has gone on to bigger and better things, including a fourth round appearance at the Australian Open with wins over the likes of Grigor Dimitrov. So you really had about the best final you could possibly hope for. And to see the show that Berrettini put on all week, I mean, here's a guy that's been to the final of Wimbledon, who's probably got an 80-foot mural of himself all clad in boss somewhere in Rome, Italy, if not other places as well. I mean, he really is a bigger-than-life presence. And then Nuno Borges is just the working man's kind of modern day Sammy Giammalva. He kind of looks like Sammy, if you ask me. And these guys are both such great sportsmen. We saw Nuno overrule a call, which gave away a set point, which could have really cost him. And we just saw such a great example of sportsmanship by both players that it just had to be a pleasure for you to sit and watch these two guys representing your tournament.
It really does, Andy. And I think both of them were fan favorites. I mean, obviously, Berrettini's the bigger name. He's done huge things in the game. He's been to the top 10. He's played the world, you know, the ATP Tour Finals, been a semifinalist at the Open. He's, right, you know, a finalist at Wimbledon. He's won Queens twice. He's won events. So he's a huge name in tennis. And then his looks don't hurt as well.
I mean, so says my wife. I'm sure so says both of our wives.
Correct. So, and then having won it the first year and that launched him, he's just a fantastic guy to have around the tournament. And Borges is, like you said, he's just a working man out there that doesn't miss much, but can pound the ball off the ground, wow, serves well, plays the big points well, never going to beat himself. And he just hung in there and fought hard. He was down 3-0 in that second set breaker and just very calm. You know, he had had some match points and he just stayed mentally sharp and he didn't really choke, you know, when it really got to the end of the match and fought for it and was so relieved when he won. And I don't think he could really believe it, but he's now a 2-time champion in Phoenix and he's a great champion.
Before we go, Johnny, Christopher Eubanks comes to your tournament. Tanasi Kokkinakis comes to your tournament. Artur Casso, who we want to wish him well, he had a little bit of a health scare in Miami after Phoenix. But, I mean, he's a guy that you can tell is an up-and-comer. And you had several others that are guys, this Terence Ottman from France. I mean, the French were really well represented at this tournament.
Yes.
And I think people need to realize that if you've gotten to a point in the BNP Paribas Open, let's face it, it's still an amazing experience. But if for some reason you find that that situation doesn't work out for you from a travel perspective, from a ticket perspective, from an accommodations perspective, coming to Phoenix at that time of year, it's not a consolation prize, man. It's great tennis. It's a great experience. It's great hospitality. And as far as circling back to our original question, the business of running a tennis tournament is not necessarily something that is for the faint of heart or for the people who lack experience. You've got the heart for it. You've got the experience. You were out there. You were one of these guys that if you were on the tour when this tournament was going on, you'd have come to Phoenix and you'd have played. And you know exactly what this needs to look like. So congrats on running it as well as you did again. And for me to be my small part of it, I am so grateful and thankful and just enjoy every minute of it. And I can't implore people enough to give the Arizona Tennis Classic a serious look as a travel destination. There's so much to do during that time of year. The weather's great. And what else can I say? I mean, just congrats on another amazing year, Johnny.
Well, Andy, I really appreciate it. And, you know, having you there, you're a staple in the tournament and I think you're comfortable out on the court, you know, interviewing the players and, you know, these guys have gotten to know the comfort level there. And what we're trying to do is, you know, we see a lot of the same players come back, which is always nice. And we get new ones. You know, we had Fognini this year and,
right,
and you know, we had, you know, Michael Moe and JJ Wolf. We had a lot of
great doubles.
Yeah. Great Americans, Rinki Hijikata, who was an Australian Open doubles champ. So, I mean, we see some of the same faces and then we see new faces. So every year it's exciting from that standpoint. And I think, you know, having you out there emceeing and hosting and these guys and talking to them and interviewing them has been kind of a fun thing to see every year. And then obviously doing the ceremony at the end, it's been a lot of fun, Andy, and it's been really fun working with you. So I appreciate what you do for us.
Well, and then last thing before we go, we want to thank all of the guys that come out from our era, you know, the UT guys that come out and the guys that you were, you know, playing juniors against, the Blaine Willenborgs of the world. And all the Texas guys, I mean, it would take Gary Plock, one of the great players in the history of University of Texas tennis, who people know that name well. And, you know, four-time number one player over the course of the 70s, and you know, Doug Snyder and Doug Pilot and Tom Fontana, and them bringing their beautiful wives, and the Pompan brothers.
And John Austin showed up the last day. John Austin showed up. So, and Bruce Nichols was there. So he had NCAA champions.
Bruce Nichols, right.
A lot of ATP alumni that were there. And so, that's always fun to have guys that come back from that played on the tour that can enjoy, this kind of tennis at this level. And we're just, excited to share it with everyone. And it's been a lot of fun.
I'm Andy Zodin. He's Johnny Levine. We want to thank the great Mats Wilander. We want to thank Alex Gruskin again from Cracked Rackets for joining us. We are kickserveradio.com, part of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, and we are excited about 2024. It's off to a great start, and looking forward to the rest of the year and hoping that you'll be joining us along the way.